So, other useful results deal with the composition of functions. Okay? Suppose you have a function which is differentiable and another function which is differentiable. Okay? And you take the composite function. What property has this function? Is it differentiable? And what is its gradient? Okay? So, the situation is the following. Suppose we have a function g from Rn to R, and then a function h which goes from R to R. Okay? And we can consider the composition of these two functions. H compose g. It means this is a function, so we go from Rn to R, and then from the value we got here in R to this value we got here in R. So f of x is we take g of x, so this is in Rn, you go to a value g of x in R, and then you compute h in this point. Okay? This is the composition of the two functions. Okay, let's suppose that g is differentiable at a point x bar in Rn. Okay? H is a function of one variable, so rather than saying it is differentiable, we can simply say that it has derivative, it has the derivative at which point? Okay, I found out another mistake in my notes. At g of x bar. Okay? This function, one variable, has the derivative at this point. Let's say, you can imagine that this is differentiable everywhere and this has the derivative everywhere. Okay? So, what about the composition, which is a function from Rn to R? Well, if this is the case, f is differentiable, at x bar, okay? So if you compose a differentiable function with a function of one variable which has derivatives, you get a differentiable function. And you have an expression for the gradient of this function. The gradient of f at x bar is given by the gradient of g at x bar times the derivative of h computed in the point g of x bar. Okay? Here I use the usual notation from basic calculus and the graduate program. The derivative, prime. Okay? So you have these two properties. Okay? Example. Okay. Okay. For instance, you can consider g of x1, x2 to be x1 plus x2. Okay? And h of, let's say, c to be e squared. Okay? Which is the function f? Come on. So, I start from x1, x2, and I got x1 plus x2, and then I take the square. Okay? So, you see, easy function can be decomposed in this way. What is this saying? Okay, this is a linear function, this is differentiable. This has a derivative. Okay? What is this formula saying? If I want to take the gradient of f, okay, I take the derivative of h. Which is the derivative of h? Please. Two times t. So it's two times t, but we compute it in this point, which is x1 plus x2. Okay? And then we take, we have to, sorry. I have to give the gradient of g at the point. So, if we take the derivative with respect to x1, we get 1. If we take the derivative with respect to x2, we get 2. So, the gradient of this function is the vector whose components are 2 times x1, sorry, x1 plus x2. Okay, both components. Okay, so you can decompose function exploiting this type of tricks. Okay, so let's just say simple. I have this function, I take the derivative of the square, which is 2 times the function, and then I make the partial, the derivatives of the arguments. Okay, roughly speaking. There's another situation which is interesting. And it's the following. Suppose we have a function g from Rn to R, and we have f function h1, h2, hn from R to R. Okay? And this is not a mistake. The n here is the same n we have here. Okay? If you want this, you can see this as a unique function from R to Rn. In which way? H at t is the vector whose components are h1 at t, h2 at t, hn at t. Okay? So now you could go from R to Rn, exploiting these functions, and then from Rn to R. So you can consider this other composition. I write it here. F can be the composition where you first take g, you start from, yeah, you first take H, okay, and then you take G. This goes from R to Rn, and then from Rn to R. Okay? So, here, what I'm saying is, let me write it here, what I'm saying is that F at some value T is nothing but G computed in H of T, which is H1 of T, Hn of T. Okay? So, this is a function from R to R. Okay? F goes from R to R. Okay? We can discuss differentiability if this function has a derivative or not. Okay? So, if F is differentiable, now let's say, yes, if F is differentiable, and all H1, H2, Hn have a derivative, okay, let's see where. So we start from H, so this is differentiable at this vector, H1 in T bar, H2 in T bar, Hn in T bar, and these have a derivative at T bar. Okay. If these are true, then the composition of these two functions defined this way, which is a function from R to R, has a derivative at T bar, and which is the derivative? Well, the derivative of F at T bar is the scalar product between the gradient of G computed at H T bar times the vector whose components are the derivatives of H1, H2, Hn at T bar. Okay? I think I will use this theorem just once, but it's important, okay? Because here somehow this is H1, H2, Hn are giving you a vector as a function of a unique value. You are giving some parametrization of some curve, okay? The starting point will be, for instance, for t equals 0, and the last point will be for t equal 1. And as t goes from 0 to 1, this will give you a trajectory in the n-dimensional space. Okay? And then you want to apply f, g to the points of this trajectory. Okay? And so this is the property. Both results tell you if you have derivatives, if you have differentiable functions, you compose them in the appropriate way and you preserve differentiability over the existence of derivatives. Okay? Is it clear? I have one last thing. which is a definition. And it is the definition of the Jacobian matrix. Okay? We have a function, which I will call capital F, which goes from Rn to Rm. Okay? So it's not a real value function. This function, you can see it as a collection of m functions which goes from Rn to R. Okay? You can see F as F1, Fm, where Fi goes from Rn to R, okay? And so F at x is nothing but F1 at x, F2 at x, Fm at x. In other words, the Fi are the components of F. Okay? I give you an example in two variables, x1, x2. The first component is x1 plus x2 squared, the second component is x1 minus x2, and the third component is x2 squared. This is a function which goes from R2 to R3, okay? And this is F1, this is F2, and this is F3, okay? Obviously. Well, if we suppose that the components have a partial derivative, okay? So that we have the gradient of F1, the gradient of F2, the gradient of Fm. Okay? The matrix. Well, the matrix whose rows are these gradients okay. So we have m rows, each gradient is a vector in Rn, so we have n columns, so this is a matrix from Rn times R. This is the way to denote matrices. This is called the Jacobian matrix of capital F at X. Professor Bevilacqua and I will use the Jacobian matrix to teach you how to solve non-linear systems of equations. Professor Bevilacqua will show you that, and I will show you how to apply non-linear systems, methods for non-linear system of equations to optimization problems. Before switching to the last argument, to the last topic in calculus, well, what is the first line of that Jacobian matrix? It's the derivative of x1 with respect to f1 It's the derivative of f1 with respect to x1, the derivative of f1 with respect to x2, and from the derivative of f1 with respect to xn. Similarly, the second row is the same type of derivatives for x2. The last component of that, Fn, and we have the derivative of this one. Okay, so this is the matrix whose elements are all the derivatives of all the function Fi with respect to Xj. Okay? The generic element of this matrix is the derivative with respect to Fi with respect to Xj. Okay? So this is the generic element, the ij element of the matrix. Okay? So you have a collection of functions from Rn to R, and you take all the partial derivatives and you put them into a matrix. As an exercise, you could compute, very easy exercise, you could compute the Jacobian matrix of this function. Okay? You just have to take six partial derivatives, okay? Which are very easy because these are easy polynomials. There's one last topic in calculus that we have to face. First of all, do you have questions? Is it clear? Well, we have considered a function from Rn to R. Okay? And I have taken, for instance, the directional derivatives. So I'm just giving the writing the definition once again. But as we discussed earlier, the derivative itself is a function. I could be thinking about taking the derivative of the derivative. I mean, we could consider this function, which I denote by partial f over partial d, which is the function that to each x makes correspond the derivative of f with respect to d of x. Okay? This is a function which goes from Rn to R. Exactly like F was. Okay? I can even forget this is a derivative. This is a function. Okay? So, I can repeat everything I told you for a generic f for these particular functions. Okay? So, I can take, for instance, the derivative in the direction v of this function, which is itself a derivative with respect to the direction d. And I can simply write once again the definition. It's the limit as t goes to 0 of this function computed in x bar plus t times v minus the same function computed in x bar, this divided by t. Okay? If it exists. Okay? I suppose it does. This is called a second order directional derivative. Okay. The usual notation is the following. The usual notation is partial square of f over partial with respect to direction d of partial with respect to direction g. Okay? Notice that the order of v and d... No, sorry. This should be v, because it's the derivative with respect to direction b. Sorry. Okay. The order is relevant, okay, because this b goes here and this b goes here, okay. You are first you take a derivative on the on a direction and you consider it a function, and then you consider another direction. Okay. We will focus only on the directions of the canonical basis, on partial derivatives, okay? We will focus only in the case in which d is the vector ei and v is the vector ej. So, 0, 0, 1, 0, and similarly where this is the I or J component, okay? And the usual notation in this case, as you can imagine, is not V and D, but is J, XJ, and XI, okay? We say that F has second order partial derivatives if this limit exists. Okay? Well, and first we must put in the definition also the fact that first order derivative exists. Okay, so let me state it once again. F has second order partial derivatives if it has first order partial derivatives, the ones we've seen up to now, and this limit for the derivatives exists. Okay? Let's take an example, okay, to make things clear. F of 2, as usual, I will take two variables, okay? And I will take, for instance, the sine of p times x1, x2, okay? If I take the derivative with respect to x1, the first partial derivative, what do I get? I have to take the derivative of the sine, which is the cosine, and then I have to take the derivative of the argument with respect to x1, which is p times x2. Okay? And similarly, the derivative with respect to x2 is p times x1 cosine of p times x1 x2. Okay? These are functions. I could have told you, this is a function of x1 and x2. Take the derivatives, the partial derivatives. Okay? For instance, you could take the partial derivative with respect to x2 of this derivative, okay, which I told you we are denoted by in this way, x2, x1. Well, this is the derivative, now I take the derivative with respect to x2, okay? This is a bit of a mess, because now it is a product, so I take the derivative with respect to these terms, and I get p times cosine of the argument, and then I have to keep this fixed, and make the derivative of this. The derivative of the cosine is minus the sine, so minus the sine of the argument, and then I have to take the derivative of the argument with respect to x2, which is p times x1. So here we have p squared x2 x1. Okay? By exercise, take the derivative of with respect to x2 first and x1 afterwards, okay? And take also the derivative with respect to x1 of the derivative with respect to x1. I'll give you another notation. If E and J are equal, you generally don't write this twice. You simply write it this way. X1 squared. By the square you mean you are taking this twice. Okay? To simplify notation. It's just a name. Okay? Okay. You can do it as an exercise, and if you do the exercise right, you will achieve the same expression. Okay? Is it a coincidence? Did it happen by accident? The answer is no. It happens because there is a property of second order partial derivatives, which roughly says that if the second order partial derivatives exist, and they are continuous functions, then if you take the derivative with respect to one variable first and another variable afterwards, the result you get is exactly the same that you would get switching the order of the derivatives. Okay? So if I take the derivative with respect to x2 of the derivative with respect to x1, it's exactly the same thing to take the derivative with respect to x1 of the derivative with respect to x2. Okay? This is called the Schwarz theorem. if f has second order partial derivatives and the partial derivatives are continuous function, then you can switch the order in which you take the derivatives and you will get exactly the same result. We could take the matrix whose elements are the second order derivatives. Okay? So we could take the matrix whose first element, whose first row is the second order derivatives with respect to x1 twice. I thought it was. So, whose first row are the derivatives with respect to x1 of all the first order derivatives. Okay? And so on until you get the derivative with respect to xn of the derivative with respect to x1 up to the derivative twice of f with respect to xn twice. Okay? So the ij element of this matrix is nothing but the derivative with respect to xi of the derivative with respect to xj of f at the given point. Okay? This matrix is called the Hessian matrix of F at X bar. No, sorry, I didn't put the bar at X. Okay? Next remark. I told you about Schwarz property. Okay? You can switch the order of the derivatives if the functions are continuous. Okay? So, what about this element and this element? They are the same. Okay? So, if I take the element ij and the element ji, they are the same. So the matrix is... forza. The matrix is... the element ij is equal to the element ji. Symmetric. So the Hessian matrix is always a symmetric matrix. Oh, sorry. It's always a symmetric matrix if F has continuous second order partial derivatives. Okay? And symmetric matrices have a nice property. The eigenvalues are real numbers. No complex eigenvalues. Okay, I will generally call a function f twice continuously differentiable if it has all the second partial derivatives and these partial second order partial derivatives are continuous functions, okay, at the considered point. And this gives, and I'm ending the lecture with this result, and we'll start from here, on, hopefully on Friday, we have second order Taylor's formulas. Don't worry, we are almost done with calculus. Okay? The next lecture I will give you a few further remarks. I will show you some pictures, and then we can finally start the topic, the real topic of our lectures. The first Taylor formula says, however I take a B in Rn, I will write it shortly, there exists some t between 0 and 1, such that f of x plus b is equal to f of x bar plus the gradient of f at x bar times b plus, we have an explicit formula for the residual of the first order term. 1 half b transpose the Hessian matrix of f at x bar times, no sorry, at x bar plus times t times b times b. Sorry, I didn't give you the notation. The Hessian matrix is generally denoted by nabla square f. Okay? This formula is telling you the residual of Taylor's formula, first order Taylor's formula, is done this way. Okay? It's exactly 1 half V times the Hessian matrix times B, and the Hessian matrix is not computed in X bar, but is computed in this point, which is one appropriate point on the segment between X bar and X bar plus B. Okay? The weak point is exactly the same of the mean value theorem. We don't know T. Okay, we have no way to compute with some algorithm T. The other Taylor formula is saying, okay, let's take the Hessian matrix at X bar. Okay, the formula will be no longer exact. There will be a residual. Okay, so the second Taylor's formula is telling you the same thing. You get always the same stuff, but you compute the Hessian matrix in X bar, and you are left with a residual. Okay? Which is the property of the residual? Is the following. The residual divided the square of the norm of V goes to zero as the norm of V goes to zero. So, the residual is going to zero faster than the square of the norm of V. Okay? So, if we have second order derivatives, we have two Taylor's formula. One gives you the formula for the residual of the first order Taylor's formula, but it has to compute the action in an unknown point on this segment. The segment whose spring points are x bar and x bar plus b. Or you can compute the action matrix in x bar, but then you are left with the residual. But the good news is that the residual goes to zero faster than the square of the norm of b. Okay? So, the next lecture I will start discussing this for a particular kind of function which will be very important to us, and are quadratic functions. Okay? Quadratic functions are polynomials of degree 2 in the variables x1, x2, xn. Okay?